Let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on the Lawrence Holmes Show.
Open with some Jodeci, you said, huh?
Yeah, you know, Herbie is already starting to put his whole thing on the show.
I like it.
So,
when I called the Bayou Classic over the weekend, there was an offensive lineman, the right tackle for Southern. His name was Jodeci Harris. So the very first opportunity I got, it was like me and Charles Arbuckle called the game with Todd Harris. First opportunity we got where Jodeci Harris made a good block, said his name. We had to get into it real quick. I don't know how many. Well, watching the Bayou Classic, that demographic got it.
I understood that reference.
But a standard college football game, maybe a certain percentage, wouldn't quite know what we were doing.
Probably why he was named that.
Exactly. You can only imagine which song was being played at the point of impact. to use a term I can get away with in the moment.
Make me a bicycle clown.
I'm so glad this show hasn't stopped being stupid. Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes. I'm here with you until 2 o'clock today. We have a lot of good stuff coming up for you on today's program. The executive producer of this fine program is Herb Lawrence. Mike Chen is going to hang out today. So this is 2 weeks in a row that Mike will be here for the things you think you know about the NFL. We're going to do that around 12:40. You heard me talking with Dan and Connor about Patrick Manley. We had a conversation about the importance of special teams and specifically about kicking and why kicking in the NFL is so bad. And we got some numbers to break some of that stuff down with you. So we're going to do that in the next segment. But we start the show as we start all things with a rundown.
Run them down.
The rundown.
The rundown are the stories that we are keeping an eye on and like to share with you here to start things off. This is kind of interesting. Cole Hamels went on the White Sox Talk podcast with Chuck Garfine and talked about how he thinks he might be a good fit in the White Sox rotation.
That's kind of what we've been really trying to point out is just how somebody can complement the other pitchers in the rotation. Being left-handed is really helpful. How you line up in that division. I've had pretty good success with the teams in that division. At times, but just now looking at where teams who they have in their lineups and what they don't do well against, that's how you want to base your rotation off of.
Now, to me, this feels like a guy who's like, look, there's a market out there for me that might be a good place for me to land, and I might be able to get the top of what I think I could earn in 2020. Herbie, what's it sound like to you? You're a resident White Sox person.
I think he's auditioning or at least sending his name out there for the White Sox. I'm sure his agent's already done so, but like that sounded like he was trying to say, you know what, you guys don't have any lefties. Rodon's not coming back until July. I'm a crafty veteran. Kidding, you like old people. Come on through.
Does it sound as if, like, should we look at the way the Grandal thing went down and now here's Cole Hamels talking about the South Side and have the White Sox, as far as their reputation around baseball, are things changing slowly?
I think that people know that the White Sox can't fail again, especially with big money free agents. And so they have a lot of money. So Cole Hamels is like, you know what? I made $20 million last year. I can get a shaving of that. But also, there's a team out there that needs a left-handed starter. Let them overpay me like they overpaid Yasmani Grandal. I'm not complaining that they did that. They gave him an option, and they said, hey, there's a lot of money, and that's why he signed it early November.
Sure. And you kind of have to do that if you're them.
I'm sure that all the rest of the free agents said, wow, all right, the White Sox ain't playing around anymore. Let me go and lobby myself for their services, my services for them.
And I don't have to change where I live.
Perfect.
I got this condo or whatever he has, and I could just go to the ballpark every day.
I live over there in Eugenie Terrace. I can stay there.
Just jump on Lakeshore Drive. Come on through. Once you get past Roosevelt, easy.
Car won't break down.
That's right. Let's hope not. All right, then let's talk about the Blackhawks. Things are bad for the Blackhawks.
Taves
His 900th NHL game will not be a memorable one for the Hawks captain or very many of his teammates either. They generate 37 shots on goal. Looking for another here. Kane's tapped it off. Allen stopped it. So Patrick Kane's scoring streak will expire at 15 consecutive games with a point. The Blackhawks get no points tonight, and they are defeated 4-0 by the defending champions.
Yeah, Hawks lose 4-0 to the Blues. Jake Allen stops 38. Hawks, 6 losses in their last 7 games after a 4-game win streak in which we were like, we're not going to talk about the Hawks because they're streaking. But now that they're losing, we can talk a little bit more about them. Hopefully we can get them back on the winning ways. 10-12-5 overall. Lots of injuries last night. Shaw, Strom, Keith, Leonard. Guys are either hurt or sick. Either way, they got housed by the St. Louis Blues. We move on to the Bulls. The Bulls won a game last night. I mean, they tried to give away a lead, but they didn't give away the lead. And Zach LaVine kind of put the nail in the coffin.
Check out left side, LaVine. 4-3. Bam! Onions, baby onions! Zach LaVine for 3, and it's a 7-point Bulls lead with 1:10 left.
Can they be baby onions if you've been in the league for 6 years? Asking for a friend. All right. So Zach LaVine plays great in that game. He's got 28 points. The return of Lauri Markkanen, 20 points for him. And the Bulls, this I thought was the most important stat, 25 of 29 from the free throw line last night. Zach LaVine says it's good working that two-man game with him and Lowry.
I mean, we just been trying to encourage him. We know he's been going through a rough patch, but, you know, Lowry got to be Lowry. And sometimes, you know, we got to, you know, even with an offense, be ourselves. Now, I don't think we played two-man game enough, and I think we did that a lot better today. Played some pick and rolls. I found him, you know, if his man was helping off of me. And it got him going in rhythm. He got going early, and, you know, we're just happy to see him, you know, get a 20 ball. Hopefully he breaks his little funk because, you know, we know how much we need him.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice to see aggressive Markkanen last night. Let's hope that he doesn't go away for another 4 weeks like what happened at the beginning of the season. Bulls win 113-106. You heard the highlights right here on The Score. Last night, if you were a Bears fan, there were a couple of moments where you're like, really? This is going to happen? But guess what? The Seahawks have left that playoff door open a crack for you after beating the Vikings last night.
Penny in the backfield. Metcalf, far side wide. Russell's got time. He's got David Moore wide open. Moore makes the catch. 15-10-5. Touchdown, Seahawks! From 60 yards, Russ looked up, saw David Moore running right past Xavier Rhodes, and said, here you go. Serves it up on a platter, and the Seahawks are on top, 26-17.
That highlight is courtesy of KIRO-FM. You're kind of a secondary Seahawks fan if you want the Bears in the playoffs the next couple of weeks. They beat Minnesota for you. That's helpful. Now they play the Rams, and then after that they play the Panthers. You're like, well, the Panthers? Look, they've got 7 losses. Get them to 8, and then they're out of the discussion completely. You don't have to worry about weird tiebreakers or anything like that. So they're your secondary team. And the Vikings, do you trust them? Like, real talk. Herbie, drop the music. Do you trust the Vikings? Do you trust Kirk Cousins? That's the great part about this. The other question is, do you trust the Bears? And I think we all know the answer to that.
I mean, I was talking with Adam Szczęsny today. The other scenarios outside the Bears are doable.
Yes.
Believable.
Absolutely.
The Bears scenarios.
Here we go, yo. Here's the thing about this, is that while Bears fans will have to secondarily root for the Seahawks, it also means you're going to have to root for the Packers eventually. If things go right, if everything goes right, you're going to have to root for them and then take care of your own business against the Vikings. That's all you care about right now. All you care about is catching the Vikings. And guess what? At 6-6 and 8-4, with you having a game with them, and for some reason the Vikings can't beat you, it's still possible.
Here we go, yo.
That's the scenario. All right, we can bring back the music if we want. All right, so that's it. We're going to have a longer conversation about this later on in the show. about whether or not it's a good thing for if the Bears make the playoffs. Because there is an argument against them making the playoffs, which we will discuss later on in the show. But I promised you some in-depth stuff, so I'm going to give you some in-depth stuff. When we come back, I had a conversation with Patrick Manley about kicking, about special teams, and why kicking in the NFL is so bad. I got some numbers that I want to throw your way that are going to blow your mind. I'm going to do that. I'm going to let you hear from Patrick Manley. We're going to do that next on The Score.
Middle of the field from 48 yards out of the hole to Patrick O'Donnell. Scales will send it back. Snap and placement good. Eddie Pinheiro winds it up from 48 yards. The kick is no good. Had some good juice on the ball. We're looking right down the end line, so I don't know if it was left or right. I don't have that perspective nor a replay, but the Bears misfire on the opening drive.
Highlight courtesy of our sister station, WBBM News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Jeff Joniak on an Eddie Pinheiro missed kick. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. Now, we're not going to pick on Eddie. We're going to talk about the league overall in this discussion about kicking. And you probably sit there going, man, it feels like kicking is really bad this season. You're right. There's actual evidence to back up the anecdotal, you looking around the league or watching what's going on Red Zone and being like, guys are just missing kicks left and right, literally. Mike Chin went and did the heavy lifting on this research. He's part of our production staff today, along with executive producer Herb Lawrence. So here's some stats to go along with what you just heard with Eddie Pinheiro, and then I'm going to let you hear from Patrick Manley on the subject. Through week 8, most kicks missed, extra points and field goals from the last 25 years, 2019 is far and above 121 as far as missed kicks goes. The next highest amount of missed kicks in that 8-week stretch, 2001 with 109. Kickers have made 79.9% of field goals this year, which is the lowest percentage since 2003, where it was 79.2. Last year, it was 84.7, which was the steepest decline from year to year in NFL history, if that thing holds up. Extra points. You know, extra points have been moved back for a little bit now. Extra points are at 93.2%, which is the 65th out of 88 total NFL seasons. So 88 total, like, combined seasons of the NFL, that's the 65th season of extra points being missed. Last year, it was 94.3. 1.5 field goals made a game is the lowest since 2009. Lowest success rate from field goals. This is where I think it really is an ugly thing, and we're seeing it with the Bears specifically on this. Lowest successful rate between 40 and 49 yards since 2003. People talk about the 50-yard field goals. Kickers make their money making field goals 40 to 49, and they're not making 40 to 49-yard kicks. And if you look at the Bears, and to make it specific to the Bears, if you look at the Bears, look at where Matt Nagy has been like, no, we're not going to have Eddie kick. We're going to go for it on 4th and 6 or 4th and 9. It's been 47, 48, 49 yards. Don't trust him. And if you look at Pinheiro this year, one of his bugaboos has been between 40 and 49 yards. As for the 50-yarders, field goals 50-plus have gone from 63.8% last year to 52.3% this year. That's bad. Kicking around the NFL is bad. So, Herbie, do you want to, like, at some point maybe do some imaging? Like, I think we could call this, like, ask an expert. We could do this with a lot of different sports stuff. I asked an expert yesterday. Yesterday, I said to Herbie, I was like, hey, did Dan and Connor ask Manley about kicking overall? And Patrick's job here is to analyze the Bears. It's great that he knows special teams because I can reach out to him for stuff like this. When they said he didn't, I was like, I'm going to text him right now and see if I can get to him. After the show, we went to the studio he and I was in the studio, and I asked him about this. So I wanted to share that conversation, and we have a deeper conversation about special teams too. But to start things off, I asked Patrick, why is it that kickers are so bad in 2019?
You know, at first, Lawrence, I thought it was one of those down years of lack of talent. And it could be, you know, sometimes there's 32 teams. Some years there's 25 good ones and you're trying to find the next seven. But the more I think about it, I wonder if the change in PAT made a difference on these guys. And what I mean by that is it used to be a layup. You know, after a touchdown, they'd run out there or we'd run out there and put the ball on the 2-yard line and just basically have a nice little easy layup. And it was kind of simple for all of us, the snapper, holder, and especially the kicker, where I don't think the stress was there as much. And I think now the entire game is stressful. You know, especially now you're getting later in the year with these PATs at 33 yards with bad weather. It's not just a layup anymore. They can't mishit it a little bit and it still go in. If they mishit it a little bit, it can get affected and not go in. So I truly think it might be something to do with the mental part of the game and adding that 33-yarder.
So how do you combat that? Like if you were – I know that you kind of don't – when you were in the room, you weren't really telling Robbie what to do. But as a unit, like how do you guys work through something like that?
You got to stay true to form. And you and I have talked before, and I talked to you about hitting the thirds of the goalpost. You never want to kick the ball outside of the goalpost. If the wind's moving right to left, you want to maybe go to the right third. You know, if not, just go right down the middle if the wind's moving left to right. So you kind of talk through those situations and pregame and things like that of where you're going to kick the ball. But, you know, it's more up to them and how they're going to deal with it. And I think you see the better kickers really aren't affected too much. You know, they can mentally deal with a full game of basically all field goals now. They're not PATs. Yeah, they're worth 1 point. But the distance is still in their head, and they still have to deal with that.
We watched Justin Tucker on Sunday night come through at the end of the game. He seems to be, every year, the game's best kicker. So what makes him so good?
One, he's so fundamentally sound, technically sound. And two, I got it. Morgan Cox, the long snapper, is very, very good at short snaps. Very accurate, very good with the laces. But again, he's mentally strong. He's mentally tough and he's been doing it for years. And I think his confidence is through the roof. You know, you saw him lined up for, was it 49 yard game winner. And I don't think anybody thought he was going to miss it. And I'm sure he didn't. And I think that's just part of it. He's mentally strong and he's got a tremendous leg and he's got just great fundamentals and technique.
If you were working with a college kicker that had a chance to go to the NFL, what advice would you give him on how to get and stay in the NFL?
That's a really good question. You know, the easy answer is to say learn how to be a pro, but it truly is. It's find out what you do best, how you train best, and just continue doing that. And what I mean by that is in the weight room, your workout routine, your practice routine, all that kind of stuff to make you the best person you can be. There are going to be numerous people that are going to pull from, you know, this ear and that ear and tell you need to do this, you need to do that. And I had people do that with me with long snapping, and I listened, but you take what works best for you. And if you can figure that out and take all that information and make you the best possible you as a kicker or whatever specialist you are, then you'll become pretty good. But there are going to be a lot of people telling you things to do, but find what you feel most comfortable with and what you can get the most out of your ability with, and then run with that.
What's the most more frustrating thing, you watching a kicker miss a kick or you watching a kicker kick the ball out of bounds?
Oh, kick it out of bounds. He's got a whole field. Like what Eddie Pinheiro did to start off the game the other week. That was aggravating. He thought maybe the entire team was going to rub off on the entire team, and thank goodness it didn't. But that's, you know, they have directional kicking on kickoffs, right? So you're going to try to kick away or line up and aim right, look like you're kicking right and try to hit a pull ball or kick one left. And that's what it looked like he did. But you can't miss it that bad. That's inexcusable.
How good of a multi-phase special teams player is Cordarrelle Patterson?
Oh, man. He's special. You know, one, he has got God-given ability of height, size, speed. But if you look at all the great special teamers, they have one, two. They're guys that want to be in that room, you know, at 8 a.m. before the offensive meetings at 8:30. They care about what they want to do. They care about that team. They want to be the best at that. And that's what he's got, all of it. And his return ability is unbelievable, but I think he's more impressive as a gunner. There's times they double team him. And most guys, when you say, all right, we're going to double team this guy, he's taken out. So as a returner, you don't even have to worry about, say, if Cordero Patterson's coming down your left, you don't even have to worry about him. Well, in the game plans against the Bears, you do. That's how good and dominant he is.
What did you think of what Miami did with their kicker and their punter on Sunday?
I love it. This is my favorite time of year. I think I tweeted something out last week that all of these special teams coaches and head coaches have been running 2 to 3 fakes all year long. And the teams like Miami that are out of it, that have nothing to lose, you're going to start seeing it the last month. I guarantee you the Bears have 2 or 3 lined up. The Lions have 2 or 3 lined up. All these teams, even the teams that are 10-2, have fakes lined up. But what's great is these coaches, they get sick of practicing them all the time. They're like, all right, we're going to run it. But that was a brilliant game plan, because I was reading about it, and Danny Crossman's the special teams coordinator for Miami, and Coach Phipp is in at the Eagles, and he said he knew exactly how he was going to line up. And to me, that speaks volumes to Danny Crossman, the Miami coach, because he studied a lot of tape, studied probably how they lined up against that formation before, and said, all right, guys, this is how they're going to be. This is all we have to do to execute it. This or this is going to be there. And you're hoping that the holder threw it at the punter threw it at the holder, whatever, or the kicker threw it at the holder, whichever way it was. But you're hoping that's the way it plays out, because it's more fun for the room. But it's a fun time of year, and that was a good – that was really well drawn up.
I know that my guys, when I'm doing the football after show, like depending on their position group, get fired up. Olin gets fired up over great offensive line mm-hmm. play. Same thing with Matt, or when a great run or a great stiff arm, and Alex and Lance, great tackles or great sacks. Do you sit up straighter when you see a play like that and watch it on a loop?
Oh, yeah. That was so I didn't see it live. I had the red zone on, all the TVs going on at the house, and I didn't see it. But I heard about it on Twitter, so I went straight to the computer and was trying to punch it up to see if I could find it. And I'm over there trying to break it down. I'm like, all right, they sent these linemen here. Where's the long snapper? Who's snapping the ball? And, oh, for sure, those things are fun. Any special teams fake, I'm always looking at those a little bit closer.
So is long snapper beer happening or what?
Long snapper beer is going to be here Friday, December 6th. We will be at Timothy O'Toole's for a launch party down in the city from 5:30 to 7:30. Be a little long snapper IPA. It's awesome. Tighthead Brewery is brewing it. They're up here in Mundelein, up here in the northern burbs, and I like to partake in all their beers. So we've collaborated with the name, and they're building a nice little IPA, and hopefully the Chicagoland area will like it.
Oh, Patrick, that's great, man. Congratulations on that.
Thanks, man. I'm excited for it. It's just, I always thought this, Lawrence. You're sitting behind a bar, and the name Long Snapper is a good beer. Like, hey, man, I'll take another Long Snapper.
No, you're right. And between the beer and the award, you're everywhere now.
Well, yeah, for now. It's been a crazy couple months. But that's the other thing, real quick, if you don't mind, is the Long Snapper Award for the nation's top college long snapper. He's got to be a senior. And this year we've come down with the finalists: John Shannon of Notre Dame, Liam McCullough of Ohio State, and Steve Wortel of Iowa State. And we'll have a big banquet up here at Bernie's Book Bank, profiting them, which is a nonprofit up here in Lake Bluff. And William Blair will be our big sponsor, and we'll have a nice little gathering and have a nice little evening to recognize those three and present the winner.
All right. Well, congratulations on everything and all the great work that you're doing on the score, of course. And I'm glad that you're available every now and again. Well, I just need a refresher course on what's going on special teams, because it's an epidemic in the NFL right now. No one seems to be able to kick, and no one seems to understand why.
You got a great question. I don't think anybody has it figured out, but that's just my ideas of why it's happening that way. Because you see a lot of guys mentally, they struggle. And the mentally strong ones have been around for a long, long time, and that might be part of the issue.
So that was Patrick Manley. We had a great conversation. If you're like, hey, I'm interested in that award banquet, you can actually go get tickets at patrickmanleyaward.com if you'd like to go to the Long Snapper Award banquet that he's going to have. I like that. So listen, if there's a subject matter in sports that you think we should do, like we could do like an Ask an Expert segment, text me in 67011. Let me know like some of the other things you'd like for us to dig into, and we'll see if we can match up an expert from our cadre of people that we have, where I can sometimes go outside the house and find us an expert to talk about some of these things. But I'm glad that I'm not the only one that's perplexed by why we're seeing these kickers struggle as mightily as they've struggled. The bottom of the hour is being brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Northwestern Basketball hosts number 3 Michigan State at the new Welsh Ryan Arena on December 18th. Tip-off is at 7 p.m. Tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at nusports.com. When we come back, what are some things that we think we know about the NFL now that 14 weeks is in the books? We'll discuss that. Well, 13 weeks is in the books. We'll discuss that next here on The Score.
It's time for What Do You Think You Know?
We do this every week. We talk about things that we think we know after the NFL week is concluded. We usually do this on Tuesday. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. Herb Lawrence is executive producer of the show. You'll hear his voice. Mike Chen is helping out today while Rick Camp is on vacation. You'll hear his voice. So I'll start it off. Here's something that I think I know about the NFL after 13 weeks. I think I know the NFC playoffs are going to be amazing. There are just too many good teams in the NFC right now, especially out west. The fact that right now the Niners are sitting at the 5 spot, they got to go on the road. You want to see them coming into your house? That's not good, but I am excited for specifically the NFC playoffs. I mean, obviously I'm going to watch because we're all going to watch, but I think the NFC playoffs are going to be absolutely banana pants, and I can't wait. And I'm still obviously interested in, are the Bears the 6th seed? Can they rally to become the 6th seed? So not only are the NFC playoffs interesting, at least the next 2 weeks of football in the NFC are interesting from a local perspective, although the Bears could end that by losing Thursday night against the Cowboys. Herbie, what's something that you think you know about the NFL?
I think I know that the LA Chargers, about to say San Diego, are the most unlucky team in the history of football. They're 4-8 right now. 8 losses, all of them, every single one of them, within 7 points or less. And like the old saying goes, when you're on CBS, it's the 3 o'clock game, you know you're going to be leading up to Murder, She Wrote in 60 minutes with Philip Rivers on a last-second drive, either throwing an interception or kicking a field goal.
Philip Rivers is going to be down a score. I told this, I walked in here on Sunday because I was doing some stuff, and I said, it is hell. This is what hell looks like. Philip Rivers being down a score with 2 minutes left to go in the game. It happens every week. Every week, like, you're like, oh, are they down again? And it used to be him and Russell Wilson, where Russ is down 8 with 4 minutes left to go, and then he drives down the field, and somehow you win by 10. But with Philip Rivers, it's like, oh, the thing's happening to Philip Rivers and Keenan Allen again, where they're down a score with 2 minutes left, and it's really, really, it's got to suck. Because you're right, like, all those games have been closed, but it makes me laugh every time I see it. And you can pretty much tune in every week around 5:45, and there's Philip Rivers down a score with 2 minutes left to go and no chance in hell of winning the game.
The Chargers, the old NBA, where you just have to tune in for the fourth quarter.
That's all you need. The rest of the stuff doesn't matter, unless, of course, they're playing the Bears.
Oh, that's another thing I think I know, that the Bears and all these good playoff scenarios. Here we go. Would be better if they would won that game and then made that field goal at the end.
It sure would be. Mike, what's something that you think you know about the NFL?
I think I know the Buffalo Bills are not getting enough credit for what they've done this year. Last year, they were not very good. 6-10, Sean McDermott's turned them around. Everyone was making fun of them for picking Josh Allen. Allen has obviously been way better this year. And look at the standings. Obviously Baltimore and New England have the best record at 10-2. They're right behind them at 9-3. I don't think enough people are talking about the Buffalo Bills.
I was surprised that the Bills were, what, a 6.5-point dog on Thanksgiving against the Cowboys. And I know that some of their wins don't look particularly great, but it was still a 9-win team. And yeah, you're playing on the road. I thought that was really weird that they were 6.5-point, but they're, it's good for them. I'm not a believer in Josh Allen. He has made me look real stupid this year. And I appreciate that. He is in a similar boat to Lamar Jackson, where part of the appeal of him as a quarterback is that he can run. And he's a big body guy. Like, he's going to run you over, where Lamar is going to run around you and make you collide with your teammates. But I worry the same way about Josh that I do with Lamar. How long can you get away with that? Didn't he already have a concussion issue for running around? And Tom Brady told him, stop running around like that because you're going to get your ass knocked out. And then he got knocked out.
With him
out.
Like Lamar, they've become better throwers over their 2 years as well. So if you look at his completion percentage, it's almost jumped 10 percentage points. So that it's not just the running as well.
Which is crazy because he had not completed 60% or more of his passes at any level, including high school, which is insane.
And now he's at 61.5.
That's good for him. Good, really good for him. I think I know that the Packers are going to win the NFC North. Now, I don't think they're really good. I don't think this is one of the better Aaron Rodgers teams that I've seen. I don't think this is one of the better Packers teams that I've seen. But the way that it shakes out with their schedule, I think that they've got a shot to just win this thing. And Bears fans should probably hope for them to win. Like I said, you're going to become a de facto Packers fan because you need them to beat Minnesota. And so I think that's how it plays out. I think they're a little bit better than Minnesota because of the quarterback, just a little bit. I think Minnesota's more complete, but the quarterback, I don't trust him. So I think the Packers are going to win the NFC North. Herbie, what's something that you think you know about the NFL?
I think I know that Xavier Rhodes is now no longer an elite cornerback. Actually, he's a bad cornerback. I think I know that. Why I say that is because the metrics say that last year, in 2017, he was a Pro Bowler and an All-Pro. Last year, his QB rating against was 85.3. This year, anybody will offer a guess where his QB rating is when they're throwing at him? Mike?
Is it over 100?
It is over 100.
It's
117.8.
Oh, my God!
Wow.
They're feasting on Xavier Rhodes this year, and that touchdown we played earlier by David Moore, the 60-yarder, was on Xavier Rhodes. They're completing almost 80% of their passes thrown at Xavier Rhodes' side. Last year, he started 14 games. They caught 49 of those 80 targets. This year, 69 targets, 55 completions for 80%. So I think I know that Xavier Rhodes can be had, and if the Bears kick the week 17 versus the Vikings, let's go at him.
Yeah, don't play man against Mitchell Trubisky, because I think I know that he can tear you up if you play a man defense. The Vikings won't be that dumb. Zimmer won't be that dumb. Mike Chen, what's something that you think you know about the NFL?
Well, I think I know that it's time for the backups to shine. You've got, look across the league, you've got Drew Lock in Denver, you've got Dwayne Haskins in Washington, Gardner Minshew getting his job back in Jacksonville, Duck Hodges in Pittsburgh.
Old Duck.
Can I just tell you something,
Mike? Last night, Mel and I went out, and we're sitting there at dinner, and I said to her, I go, you know, there's the quarterback for Pittsburgh's name is Duck. And she's like, just because she's just already tired of me, because, you know, I'm me. She's like, please, that's ridiculous. I'm like, no, his name is Duck. Well, his nickname is Duck. His real name is Devin. But I said, you want to know why his nickname is Duck? And she's like, I really don't. And so I proceeded to tell her that he was the Alabama duck calling champion. And she's like, you're making stuff up. I'm like, no, Old Duck is out there slinging the ball around for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Better than Mason Rudolph. Because he won't get you killed in a lot of different ways, apparently. I'm sorry, Mike, you were making a point about Old Duck.
Duck is not the point, but
Old Duck is out there slinging.
Old Duck is out there. The point is that you're going to see a lot of sketchy quarterback play the last few weeks here, because I don't think a lot of these guys are very good. And, you know, you might as well give them a chance to see if they can make a roster next year.
Andy Dalton was like, hey,
hey, they sat me on the bench. So I'm come out here and get us that first win. Get that guy off that rooftop.
Yeah, they're the one team. Cincinnati's the one team that went the reverse of that.
Future Bear, Andy Dalton. Meanwhile, y'all was pouring dirt out on Cam Newton. Just like, oh, no, Kyle Allen. Yeah, that's what. And then you're like, nope. Nope, probably not. Future Bear Cam Newton, mind you. All of the quarterbacks are coming here. All right, that's what we think we know about the NFL. We do it every Tuesday during the football season. Maybe we'll do it during playoffs, too. I still haven't decided about that yet. We are going to change the backdrop, though. Coming up, Gordon Whittenmeyer of the Sun-Times is going to join me to talk about why the Cubs are moving on from Addison Russell. I'm also asking some stuff about all the trade rumors with the Cubs. That's coming up next. I'm Lawrence Holmes. You're listening to The Score.